I'm sitting outside the brand stable in Bloberg. Leo has emerged from the sauna in Austria. How's it going?
It's going great. Everybody must know I'm nurturing a shoulder injury, which prevents me from kiting. So my plan B to get some heat is just to camp out in the sauna for days and days straight.
He'll be back. Since we last spoke, which was right before the new year, we've had some pretty outstanding big air sessions on Woo. We've had, I think, 6 of the top 12 men have set a record in the last month in Cape Town. And on the women's side, we have the fifth, the second, and the first from what has been a pretty banging Cape Town season so far. I don't know if it's the Alula kites. I don't know if it's everyone getting better at kiting, or it's just that reliable 4.0. I don't know.
I think it's, first of all, what happened in the females' world was doomed to happen. And I've been waiting for this one for a long time. I mean, you see Angelique kite and you instantly realize that, you know, 25 meters is a piece of cake for her, and she's definitely going to break 30 at one point. So that finally happened. But I think the results are, well, a result of a mix of things. You mentioned a few, but I think the main thing is that riders really, really focus more and more on big air, and the equipment is improving.
That's right.
Headlows on the Evo D-Lab, the XR Pro is making a lot of noise, and riders start experimenting with different setups that we haven't been seen so much in the past, perhaps, all geared towards maximizing score. And of course, I guess, Arlen, you're in Cape Town, but it's a good season, right?
It's been good, yeah. Yeah, yesterday, we caught up with Jason Vanderspy and Aaron Hadlow. They both were at Makassar on Monday. The vibe on the call was that it may have been some of the best conditions they've ridden in Cape Town.
Wow.
But let's rewind a little bit. So on Sunday, I'll kind of catch you up, Leo. You know, Sunday started basically as like a very sunny, calm, pleasant day at the beach for everyone in Bloberg. Around lunchtime, you could tell everyone was like getting optimistic about the forecast for the afternoon. You could see people pumping 12s and 10s. The High Five Kite School that's running like a Woo contest this month with the Lua boards, they had planned a whole downwinder with like their kite school. So they were like getting everyone ready. All the instructors, all the students had the braai set to go. Around 3 p.m., I think about every single person in Bloberg was kiteboarding at the same time. It felt like there was about 700 people on the water. Like, you look down the lineup, you could see straight kites, dolphin all the way to doodles. And then around 4 p.m., it went just like nuclear. Like, the wind ramped up to like 40 knots. And every kite school had to like abandon off the water. You could tell some people were caught out with way too big a kite. And when I spoke with Aaron, he was one of those people. So on Sunday, Aaron was out on a 9-meter D-Lab in what he thought was going to be a 25-knot session. And it ramped up like crazy.
I didn't even pack an 8 in my car. I just like stuck a 9 and 10 in, thinking it's going to be super light and probably get on the 10, maybe 9 if I'm lucky. But I got down there. I went to Dolphin Beach and had a couple of the Geotone team from the UK over, and we were riding a bit together, and it started out so good, like basically doing tricks. Like, young Max was there as well, and we were out on 9s, pretty powered, able to go big and do a lot of tricks. But then an hour or two into the session, it just started to crank up, and just so unexpected. And yeah, I started just going bigger and bigger on the jumps, and one thing led to another. I was out for like 3 hours, and because like almost every 10, 15 minutes I kept like up in my score and getting higher, I was like, I just got to stay out here. And then it got to like getting a few 30 pluses, and I thought, oh, it could be on. Like, with the kickers were so good and the wind was so strong, and somehow my setup was working, like even being so overpowered. But it was super intense, that's for sure. Like, I was, at times I was unable to hold an edge. I had to like chuck the kite into the water just to stop. Sometimes I was coming in and over the beach, like it's even windier somehow. There's like some weird channel effect over the beach sometimes. So a couple of times I was like on my release, like ready to be like, okay, I can't stop here, I'm going up the beach, and like ready to eject, but managed to keep it together until sunset. And yeah, I've got a couple of pretty decent jumps.
Yeah, Lewis mentioned you've got the watch going, so you kind of have an idea of what you're scoring out there. Did that factor in for that session?
Yeah, definitely. No, it made a huge difference because usually you go out and yeah, you can kind of tell how big it is or how high you're going, but not like accurately. And you know, I've had many sessions where I'm surprised, but many sessions when I've been like super disappointed. And if you do like five or six jumps on your watch, you kind of get a feeling for what it's going to be, you know? And if you can see that live data, you think, oh, okay, then I'm not even going to bother. I just start doing other things and working on some moves, or if it's bad conditions, just call it a day. But when you kind of see like improvements, or yeah, like yesterday we had another session, and like on my first jump, I like almost hit 30 or high 20 straight away, and then second one was almost 30, and then I was like, okay, like today it's on, it's out there somewhere. So you kind of just carry on, and if you don't have it on your watch, you kind of like, yeah, I found you're kind of just hitting and hoping, and it's a bit more motivating when you can see like you're actually gaining or kind of where you're at in the session.
What line lengths were you on for the 9 meter?
So usually, oh well, 24s mainly.
Oh, wow.
And I think when you start to, yeah, there's some advantages to coming shorter just as you get so overpowered. And then yeah, yesterday I was playing around a little bit more. But yeah, mainly like the 22s was probably the majority of the session.
I remember seeing Ruben take out some short lines at Misty a couple weeks ago, and was surprised at how much height he could get on a kind of a slightly bigger kite with slightly shorter lines.
Yeah, definitely. I think the drag is a bit of a factor when it's so strong. And yeah, I tried some like mid-length lines as well yesterday, and it didn't really affect the height too much. And also some previous sessions at Misty's, like even on some, yeah, like 14s when I just went out for a bit of a kite loop session, I was also pretty surprised how
Oh, yeah.
high you could still go. And yeah, like spoke to Ruben as well. He also had some pretty solid jumps on short lines too. So I think you can just generate the whip and hold the bigger kite a little easier. And I can imagine someone like Josh, who has the record, probably had a little shorter lines as well, just because he generally rides with quite short lines. So yeah, maybe it's helping in certain conditions.
Right.
But I mean, in generally, I would say like, yeah, like between 20 and 24s gives you the most like kind of like lift on the upstroke as it passes 11, like through to a 12 and up, because it just like generates the power for longer. But it's always a bit of a balance for sure. Just got to read the conditions on the day and see what works.
Yeah, I was watching, I think Pippa and Val and a few other folks on a D-Lab Evo. It's pretty cool that the Duotone kind of has a consensus big air kite right now. Has it been a step up in performance this year? Has that kite really kind of changed your approach to big air?
Yeah, for me, definitely. I mean, also just sticking to one kite and kind of just getting used to it for so long, it's also a huge benefit. You learn the kite inside out and when it works and when it's not. Or, but I think it's the consistency probably the most with this kite. There's not many conditions where I've come off the water thinking, man, this kite just not working. Where sometimes certain kites and certain conditions just don't match. With the Evo D-Lab, you have like really consistent performance over a range of conditions. And I think that's been like the main factor just to gain confidence for the pro riders. And you can just kind of, yeah, really place it kind of where you want to. And I think it's a good training kite. It's a good, yeah, competition kite. And you're just able to maneuver this kite in the way that kind of suits what you want to be doing. So I would say that's probably been the big factor with the performance there. But do you notice it across all brands?
I was just going to say, it was funny to see Ruben kind of announce that he was stepping away from Ozone, and then, kind of teasing where he was going to sign with next, posting some fun little jokes, I guess, on his Instagram story. And then he posted a session on Woo with a D-Lab Evo. And it really made you think, like, for these guys that are at that level, the now the Jamie Overbeeks and the Rubens, what gear that they seek out when they have a full range of choices. And we're certainly going to see a lot of folks picking that kite.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, even if it's like, yeah, even if you're just curious, and there's always a starting point, and I think it's obvious that the Evo D-Lab is everyone's quite curious to try it and use it. And yeah, it takes a little time to dial into it. And I would say it's definitely not even for everybody's style, especially if you come from another kite that you're used to or another brand and you just try it one or two times. Like, definitely something you get used to over time, again, in different conditions. But yeah, like I was going to say, like, a lot of brands are going in this direction. And now you see it, the King of the Air, quite a few, Three Strut, Alula kites that are performing well. So yeah, it's good to see, like, across the industry, there's many brands like focusing on performance kites for their top riders. And I think that will only help push the overall level as well, which is nice.
And is that ability to remove, go from five struts to three struts, a product of the material and like the characteristics of Alula?
Yeah, I believe so, definitely. I still don't think five strut kites are dead or like not the future. I think there'll be a place for them. And yeah, we could see this as an option at some point as well. But I think having such a material that can give such a solid frame with the struts and the leading edge allows for a three strut to work in quite high performance. I still believe that there's a balance between the structural stability and the turning and looping speed of a kite. And I think the free strut has a pretty good balance of that, but maybe in the smaller sizes, in more extreme conditions, when you're really, really on the edge on, you know, in huge storms or like 50 plus knots, there's for sure place for five strut kites as well.
So let's fast forward quick. So you said Sunday evening was like the surprise 30 plus session. And one other detail about that session, you were riding at Dolphin Beach. And Dolphin, if you go into the Woo app and look at Explore Map for Dolphin, Dolphin Beach is the second most popular kite spot on Woo in the world. Top spot worldwide is Workum, which is in the northern part of the Netherlands. That's the Jamie Overbeek home spot. 15,000 sessions there. And then right behind that is Dolphin and Kite Beach. So those two both have about 14,000 sessions on Woo. And your session on Sunday was the number one highest jump ever at Dolphin, 14,000 sessions. Pretty crazy when you think about how many people, how many like really top riders have charged at that spot and just how kind of special that session was.
Yeah, cool. Yes, I didn't know, but if I'm doing... going out and knowing I have the Woo running and I want to get a high score, I'm always looking at the overall leaderboard, I guess. But I'm just always like looking for just like the one number. But I mean, it's I don't think it's often like you can get the conditions like I got there. And that's kind of why I also stayed out for so long. Like, I just was out for quite a while and the conditions were improving, but the waves were also really good. And there was some crazy windy gusts coming through and people started to disappear. It wasn't busy. I could like pick the wave I wanted at the time I wanted and not really have to hold back or worry that, you know, someone might be around or landing on me, or if I could, you know, potentially go into someone else, which can happen, yeah, at the best of times around this area, just because of the amount of popularity and how many kiters are here at the moment. So I think that was a bit of a factor as well. Like, it was a combination of everything kind of lining up, and it makes quite a difference to be able to pick what wave and what kicker you want to hit and not have any second thoughts of whether you're going to make it or even having to abort, because I've had so many sessions along the seafront here in Bloberg and Table View that you're full speed coming up and you just have to, like, you have to give it up. You have to say, no, I can't. I'm going to just land on someone. And there are often many thoughts. You're like, oh, maybe that was the one, you know? And so, yeah, that definitely played a bit of a factor. So that was cool.
And I think there was even a cloud kind of like blocking the glare for a second there. Like, you could actually see.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't really think about it, but yeah, I mean, it helped a bit that it was a little overcast at some points, and yeah, you can kind of get a bit better view of the waves coming in. But I mean, it was still quite tough. It's hard when you're so overpowered just to kind of like do a small like transition or like a smaller jump to like look over and see what sets are coming. Because when you're so overpowered, you kind of got the kite so low and you're just like riding slow, edging out the kite of the window just to not lose control of your edge. If you kind of get a feel for how the sets are rolling in, you kind of know, oh, maybe the third one in the set should be pretty good, or maybe the last one, or you kind of manage it that way and get a little glimpse as you pop over the first few waves and then you can set up. I noticed like a lot of the good jumps are just really about getting everything lined up with a good takeoff and good gust, good kite position, the right kicker, and they're the ones that, yeah, you're always sure that you're gonna record a good result.
Yeah, I saw a clip from Jamie Overbeek riding up in Vorkum, and I was surprised at how slow he was riding because he was just that overpowered. And he basically was inching along in the chop,
Yeah.
accelerates for maybe 4 seconds, and then just sends it. And you just see him explode upward because of how much power he had.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy like that. I mean, that's what happens when you get so much power in the end. And like yesterday, there was another big session, and it like literally took me like 10 minutes to even get upwind. And after two tacks, my back was like killing me. Like I could hardly hold it down. You know, you're just literally skipping. And because you're not getting much forward momentum, you're not really gaining much upwind performance either. So yeah, it's pretty intense sometimes for sure.
So yesterday was so kind of round two. That was Monday, and this was the session down in Macassar. I assume you didn't take the nine out again.
No, I took the nine again.
Wow.
After the previous day, it was like, I was like, oh, I've got to try it. But when we got there, it was like there was sand up to my top of my face, and it was pretty crazy. Like a lot of the guys were out. I'd never been to that spot before, actually. So it was like the first time kind of checking it out. I didn't know what to expect from the wind or how it might be. But I mean, there was a lot of the local guys and a lot of riders out there on small kites, like doing double loops like super high and super easy. So it was clear it was super windy. So yeah, I kind of just took the extensions off my main bar and went to 22s on the nine as a first half of the session, and gave that a go. And it wasn't as clean as the day before, which was a bit of a factor. The waves were out there, kickers were out there, the wind was stronger, but to line everything up, it was pretty difficult. It's hard to explain, but yeah, like the waves would like break and then reform and break, and there was never really a consistent spot where they would peak. So to get like a really clean kicker was quite difficult. That was the main challenge for sure.
I noticed that you and Luke have the same score from yesterday.
Yeah, it was funny. We came off the water and then I was like, oh, there's one way to find out, and that's just to load them both up and check who's like sits higher up on the leaderboard. So we came in and he's like, oh, I've got 35.1, and I knew I had the same, but because I just had it like stored on my watch. But I also had run out of battery on my watch, so I just had a couple more big ones at the end, which was unknown, but I felt like I connected. So yeah, I came in, I was like, we were wondering, and then I think it was like 4 centimeters or something ridiculous. We were having a bit of a laugh about it after the session, but it was really cool to see him go out and send one.
How did you guys, can you see that in the jump table? Can you see that extra decimal point, or how do you figure that out?
So I couldn't see it at the time, but then we both got like an email as King of the Throne, or you got a new throne for the spot, and then it goes down to the decimal place. So later that evening, he sent me the one he got, and I said, oh yeah, mine says, I think his was 35.1 spot on, and mine was 0.14 or something. So I mean, it's tiny, tiny margins.
And on top of that, you had a 34.5, 34, 33, 32.5, 31.
I mean, I just kept getting fairly close. So I was like, oh, I was sure that day was going to be the day that, you know, you could get something special. But like I said, like I did definitely connect with quite a few, as you can see, but I still didn't come off the water thinking like, oh, I got one was like totally perfect. You know, I still felt there was like something on the table there, but whether it was there or not, I don't know. But it was like, so, cause it was so difficult to line up and find something. But I think if everything lined up perfectly, there was definitely another meter or so in there.
All right. Well, the nine Evo is how's Lewis doing with all this? Because I know he's supposed to be the rebel guy. Is he allowed to use the Evo? Does he have access to one?
Yeah, I think, I mean, he's fine to ride whenever he can, I believe. But I mean,
He's got the branded Rebels. He's got all his logos in the Rebels.
exactly, yeah. And I think the Rebel is still like one of the better kites for strong winds. I think it suits his style for his big loops as well, a bit more power in the kite through the loop. So yeah, I mean, I don't think it's like too much of like a hindrance for like his overall riding. For overall height, it's difficult to know, like, it's definitely a balance between like your style and the kite. And I think, like I said, I'm like so tuned in with the Evo D Lab that, you know, it kind of suits me, and I know it very well and how it reacts in different conditions. And yeah, and I think the Rebel also works really well for Lewis as well. But yeah, it's just, I think we have like different techniques and different things. So, I mean, I also saw him get some huge ones as well yesterday. But we were both came off the water saying like, well, it was so hard to line something up. And I kind of go for it no matter what, almost. Like, I just try and spend getting repetition in there, just, yeah, trying to make something work and force the issue a bit. I think Lewis is a bit more selective with his takeoff and the amount of times he's going for the jumps, so that could also be a bit of a factor. But we're having a good laugh with it. He's also enjoying it.
So that was Aaron's perspective on a record-setting session. Here's Jason's perspective.
Misties can get super good, but also it's relatively gusty even when it's really good.
Yeah.
But you can get those magic gusts that just take you straight up, which is obviously what we want. But Macassar, it's like the kind of wind. It can gust up to sometimes, like I've had it before when it's gusting like just over 60. And the thing is, it's not like gusting over 60 and dropping back down to 20. It's like it's holding.
Wow.
It's like a very consistently strong wind and super up lofty.
Huh.
So if my cast is working, for sure, like I would choose that a million times over Misty.
Wow. Was there a moment where you questioned being on a 7 when you saw Aaron was on a 9?
I was questioning Aaron on his 9. I had no idea what was going through that man's mind. It was like those D-Labs, the Evos have quite a bit of D power for sure, but the wind was strong. Like it was proper strong. I was very stacked in my 7 at times. I could have held the 8 for sure, but I felt like the 7 was the weapon of choice. Just like a smaller kite, you jump higher theoretically, but I think Aaron's just, he's just a G and can do whatever he wants. Seems to be boosting on a 9 or like 18 meter lines or whatever it was. He definitely has the experience, one could argue.
Right.
One would say he's definitely well experienced in flying a kite. So I'm pretty sure you could have taken a 10. I'm sure manhandled it, but geez, he's back. Oh, well, actually, he got out the water after the first session at Macassar, and it was just literally the first thing he says, like, Jesus, my back. He's just like moaning like a grandpa, but geez, I can't blame him because my back was absolutely knackered from holding a 7.
Right.
So fair play.
Yeah, so you scored a 34. That's, I think, was that a PR for you?
Yeah, the 34.6 was a PR for sure. Like I felt it. There was, I could have, to be honest, like if I didn't have to shoot short lines, I would have just stayed on the longer lines and just pushed the woo, the PRs, and hope like I wanted a record, to be honest.
Yeah.
But then I had to go shoot short lines for like 2 hours or an hour and a half, and I was just so broken. I went up for a second session. I only managed to pop a 32, and I caught it for like 20 minutes. And I was like, nah.
Just a casual 32.
But like really, like, oh, it was such a perfect day for like the Wii record for sure. Like one of us could have done it if we were super, super hungry for it. We should have.
Well, not bad. I mean, Aaron set the record for Africa all time, which is not an easy feat. And
For sure. I mean, it was the day for it.
By now, this is a pretty good indicator that we are getting to that limit where, you know, this is what the current material, the current riders, and the current conditions can do. Of course, there's always the opportunity for, you know, that extra 5 knots that may come through for a half an hour or something, or that perfect kicker.
Yep.
And so that's the interesting thing. And eventually, and I think this is a little bit what Aaron is looking at as well. If you take enough shots, eventually everything will line up perfectly. So I don't know. I have a feeling that we're inching closer and closer to yet another world record. And if you'd ask me where it would come from, it'd be very hard to tell because there's so many riders right now that are playing on that level and are really up there.
I was talking to one rider who was saying like, man, these Woo scores are just so crazy. Like it used to be like a 20 something was a big jump, and now it's like everyone can jump 30, and you know, it's just people are getting better. People are just getting better at this.
And the gear, right? And the focus. I mean, I think Alula was in many ways built to jump higher. Of course, it's also a lightweight, this and that. But the main effect of it is that people do seem to jump higher on these kites. And so that will continue to evolve. And techniques will continue to evolve. Spot choice. I mean, the fact that people go to Macassar, I've spent many winters in Cape Town, and that was never on my list. So I think we'll be seeing more folks headed that way, and perhaps even give Misty Cliffs a pass in the next few months.
Yeah, Misty's definitely, and it's interesting the difference with these three spots. Like if you take the main Bloberg Beach, where Aaron jumped 33 on, like, you know, an amazing day, you can't obviously you can't see the wind, but you can certainly hear the reports from the riders about how the wind feels. And Bloberg, the reason people travel all around the world to Bloberg is that it is kind of magically, like, efficient. You know, it's got this, it's not really an updraft, but it's certainly, you know, 15 to 20 knots at Bloberg feels like enough to fly almost any kite. Whereas Misty has this kind of offshore, like, updrafty feel. I would imagine Makassar also has a bit of that. I think that one we're just starting to understand more, but it kind of opens this question of, like, where will we see the next world record? You know, we now have probably five spots, let's say, that we could take bets on between Lucat, you know, Cold Hawaii, maybe Vikanze, probably not, Bloberg, Makassar, Misty Cliff. And then there's all the spots that no one ever goes to. Like the whole coast of Chile, for example, is just like a big cold Cape Town, but it's too far away from Europe. So there's that unknown factor. People have always talked about Iceland. We don't know. Maybe Iceland has a world record.
Well, that's the thing, right? You can look at the wind forecast and it may look really good, and you pitch up at the spot and you find out it's just not lifty lofty, right? What you just mentioned about Cape Town, about Dolphin Beach, there's something to the wind that's not expressed in wind speed, in gusts or anything. It's just you ride it and you're like, whoa, this is punchy, lifty. And that's something you'll need to find out in, for example, Chile. But I will say this, I mean, these storms that went through Cold Hawaii, those hold an insane potential to me. If you look at the sessions that the guys had, of course, they were in complete survival mode and only stayed out for a short amount of time. But get a good bunch of riders up there, have them properly prepared and have them go out for, you know, sessions and just ultimately take shots. And three slices of Swiss cheese will line up that you'll see through them and you'll have a new world record. So if I'd have put my money on somewhere, I'd say Denmark.
The amount of time the guys are spending in Cape Town, it was cool to like see that, to do that post yesterday, because it was like so much Cape Town representation, with Jason Vanderspy being, you know, born and raised here, kiting from like a very young age with, you know, all of these top riders. He's kind of like this, he's like truly a kid that grew up kiteboarding from like zero. You know, he had a freestyle chapter to his kiteboarding, but he has known Big Air as like the pinnacle of the sport. And then you have Luke McGilloway, who he mentioned. Luke is like the guy that taught him to kiteboard. Like Luke was the one that like had him kind of between his legs, like riding him around the local spot. And Luke joined him yesterday for that session. And the world record on Wu is set by a South African. Granted, he was in Denmark, but he is South African as well. So as much credit as we give the Dutch, you know, the other side of this world record, not only where it will happen, but who it will happen to, which kite brand, which rider, etc.
Well, that, I mean, that's the other thing. I think there's many kite brands closing in. We've got the Core XR. Ozone was traditionally with the Edge way up there, and there's a whole bunch of things happening here. So I think we'll be looking forward to an exciting couple of years, to be honest. And I don't want to say it, but we're kind of on a quest to 40 meters, I guess, right?
I can tell you, from the clips that we see on a regular basis, Jamie Overbeek is, you can tell he is like the X factor in all of this. Like the level that he pushes on flat water, I think has like everyone in the kite community just like in awe, right? Like no one is jumping higher on flat water off of virtually nothing. And what's cool about Jamie going into this year, and it, you know, we'll see how this plays out, but Jamie just dropped his sponsor. So Jamie just parted ways with Ozone. He still has all his Ozone kites. He still has his, you know, R1 foil kite and his Edge, whatever. But he will now have the opportunity to ride maybe a few other setups that he might not have, you know, before this. There's a couple of riders I'm curious what they roll into Lucat in April with for the GKA and just how high they can get. And I think that those sessions in March, maybe they show up a little bit early, will definitely be ones to watch. But also with Jamie, like he's been riding this month in his home spot in Vorkum, and just above freezing, sometimes below freezing temperatures. It's not just the kids at the beach.
And it's getting stormy there again in Europe. Yes, yeah, storms moving through.
The game is on. The game is on. Leo, back to the sauna. Talk to you soon.
Back to the sauna. Talk to you in another month when I'll take another 5-minute break.
Yep.